and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon, recording from Nicosia, and with me in my virtual studio, I have Ksenia Economidou. Welcome, Ksenia.
Hi, Magda. So happy to be here.
Happy to have you with me, eventually. We made it happen.
Yes.
Ksenia, to introduce you to the listeners, you are a certified rapid transformational therapy practitioner.
Correct.
Okay. Do you want to explain to me and us what that is, what rapid transformational therapy is?
Absolutely, yes. So RTT, known as rapid transformational therapy, is the hypnotherapy modality Marisa Peer created. It is based on hypnosis, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and neuroscience.
Okay. And why is this a recent type of therapy, or has it been around for a while?
She's been active for over 30 years, but she has started training others the past few years.
And why is this therapy different?
So this therapy goes beyond the traditional hypnotherapy because it includes the NLP, and it has parts of CBT as well. We do use regression, so we do go back to when a limiting belief was adopted in our subconscious, and the steps she created in between are hers. So how to disassociate, for example, from what we find out, disassociate the actual event from the meaning we give to it, and therefore the actual limiting belief from the impact it has on to our self-worth. And of course, we give a customized audio to the individuals based upon what comes out during the session. So there are parts that she included from other modalities that are very helpful, and with the basis, of course, of hypnosis, created rapid transformational therapy.
And I'm going to ask you a question because I know I've had discussions with you around this. We always associate hypnosis with not being in control. So a lot of people are unwilling to enter into this kind of any kind of therapy that says yes. Hypnosis. I think you're the type of a therapy you practice is slightly different.
Absolutely. So it's really unfortunate that hypnosis is used for entertainment purposes, for in shows where people do gain control over others. But in the therapy world, therapeutic hypnosis, it's the exact opposite. People are fully alert, in full control of what they're sharing, in full control of their experience, and they remember everything afterwards.
I think that's the most important part, that you don't feel as if there's a blank.
Exactly.
And why, I think you're now running, a group of, a series of trainings called Am I Enough?
Correct.
And this actually resonates quite well with me because I've just become a pensioner.
Mm-hmm.
And that limiting belief that I'm not enough anymore, or I'm in some way impeded from actually operating as a normal human being like I was the day before I turned 65, is a challenge.
Yes.
No matter how aware you are. So how can you help me or anyone in a similar position, that there's the social construct that a pensioner is disabled or lesser or incapable?
So what happens is that we adopt the beliefs of the society, of religion, of our surrounding environment while growing up without even knowing. And we believe that this is how life is. So going against it takes I mean, someone needs to be conscious enough to understand that it doesn't have to be this way. We can actually change it. It is a limiting belief. And yes, it might be the norm, but it doesn't mean it's beneficial to the individual, right?
Mm.
And so what we would do in this case would be to work with the I am enough belief. The fact that it's showing up here doesn't mean that this is the circumstance creating it. It means that this is the circumstance through which it's expressed.
Mm.
So what we're doing with hypnosis and RTT is that we're going to the root, we're going to see how it started, why do you relate to it, and work with the root. And so once we work with the root, then the symptoms become irrelevant. If that part is healed, it doesn't need to express its way anymore. And that's why people who are going through depression or addiction or weight problems, if we're working with the symptom, it means that the mechanism that was developed will find another way, more likely equally destructive, to express itself. But if we work with the root, then the substance becomes irrelevant. The destructive behavior becomes unfamiliar. We're making, in hypnotherapy, we're making the unfamiliar familiar. And in this, I mean feeling not enough, lacking self-worth, feeling unlovable, that our dreams are not available to us. So we're making that familiar so we can live by it and adopt those beliefs. And at the same time, making the familiar unfamiliar. So the familiar that this is what's expected from society, from women, from pensioners. This is what my mom said, religion says. So that's not our truth.
Okay. I mean, I even though I'm a relatively aware person, it's a challenge. I mean, I need to tell myself every day that even though I have this label,
it is.
I can just recreate another reality. Not a reality. I just need to recreate myself a different way, although I am challenged by what other people think of me.
Yes. I mean, it is challenging because us talking about creating our own reality with tangible tools and modalities is a new thing. We don't even know how our structure works. We don't even know how our mind works.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that no matter what's happening or what beliefs I adopted during childhood, now I can come as an adult, review, evaluate, and shift them, that's a new conversation for people. So it's unfamiliar, it's scary. It's like, well, if I can change that, then why hasn't anyone told me? What are
exactly
we doing as what are we doing as a society? What are we teaching children? So it's
sorry, and this to, is the, and it actually goes exactly against what we faced with, because with social media, a lot of social media reinforces a lot of this. You've got to be thin.
Yes.
Or you've got to be successful in a specific way.
Correct.
And you get bombarded with this all the time. And unless you step back, and whether you like it or not, you do get affected.
Mm-hmm.
Subconsciously, you look at a picture of an ad and suddenly there's a unfamiliar body in that picture, and you think, oh, that's wrong. You don't accept that it's part of. So it's a challenge. What does this do to me as a human being? The fact that I'm bombarded with I'm not enough, or I don't fit in.
So what we are invited to do here is, once we become aware that subconsciously we are feeding the mind with comparison, with low self-esteem beliefs because of our surrounding environment and how we grew up, and of course the beliefs of the ones around us while we're growing up. Like, subconsciously we adopt their beliefs. So once we become aware of our power in actually participating in what beliefs are in our subconscious and what beliefs we live by, then what's left to do, at least in my perspective, and what I've done, is to actually visit the subconscious and see what's there and start working with the beliefs there, disassociating with those false and distorted beliefs. And I say false and distorted because most of our beliefs have been created and adopted before the age of 7. So, which means that due to the fact that our character and personality is formed before the age of 7, and we do not have critical thinking filters, contrast and experience before that age, it means that by definition, whatever is happening
was formed by someone else.
Is distorted. The interpretation of the child is distorted, adopted unconsciously, and now the adult, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, is living by those beliefs without even knowing. So what we're invited to do is access the subconscious and work with the root of our issues. Our issues are nothing but a pattern, a habit that was created, a way to express the root. We are invited to access, become aware of the root and work with that. And the reason I'm saying this is because the mind is 5% conscious and 95% subconscious, which means that we are aware of what's in the 5%. The language of the conscious mind is language and logic, so words and logic. The language of the subconscious is images and emotions, and that's why we see brilliant people with absolute logic in what they're the way they're thinking, and then something happens, a feeling is triggered, and then we see them doing absurd things, maybe us included, right?
Yes.
Emotion always beats logic. So the fact that we know what's in that 5% means that the other 95% of the time we're running on autopilot. And
over which we have no control. We're just doing things automatically.
Exactly. And the beliefs and patterns and behaviors we live by are not ours, are not the ones we consciously create in that 5%. It's the ones we already adopted in an unconscious state.
Which someone else imposed on us.
Well, imposed on us,
over which we had no control.
Yes, yes. I mean, it wasn't done deliberately. It was just how things work.
And tell me what kind of, because we're going through a period in time where there's a big focus on mental health.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
What kind of things can doing this treatment therapy help? What kind of context can it help us work through?
So in RTT, we have a list of symptoms. The individual can of course, bring their own. We can work with what the individual is going through. And some of those symptoms include addictions, alcohol, drugs, smoking, sugar, weight problems, depression, fear of failure, fear of rejection. I mean, fears in general, phobias, sleep problems, childhood trauma,
eating problems, disorders,
even health problems. So because it's most of our health issues start with a thought pattern, and the thought pattern is triggered by a belief. So if we access the belief, then it becomes easier for someone who's going through an addiction, a health issue, is expressing themselves through distraction, to take the belief from feeding the equation. So their journey to healing becomes easier. And the reason I'm just listing the symptoms is because regardless of the symptom, what we're actually doing is taking the symptom and going to the root. So taking a symptom and going to the root is the same. It's just a standard procedure. Once we access the root, then that's where the skills of the practitioner come in.
Okay.
Because it's through questions, while the person is in hypnosis, we actually have a dialogue in which they are fully
conscious.
Conscious of it and in control of what they're sharing. They're fully alert and in control of what they're sharing. So once we unlock different, let's say, parts of themselves, then we get to help them heal and address the root. And that's why of course hypnosis is considered a faster method, a faster modality than others, but at the same time it's still a process. So it's not one session, once off, everything is fixed. It still takes time, a few sessions. And
even though on personal experience, having been to one of your sessions, I did have a minor breakthrough.
I did have a minor breakthrough.
So it's a start. Each session.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I mean, we do expect to see results from the first session. And the reason we say it's a process, it's because a good average of hypnotherapy sessions based on RTT would be 3 to 4 sessions. That would take 3 to 4 months. It's usually once a month. And in between, of course, we leave the gap for the person to listen to their audio for 21 to 30 days. So each time the person revisits the subconscious, they go even deeper and they create an even more complete picture of what's going on. And that's why we say that, yes, we do expect to see results from the first session. But due to the fact that we're working with the root and not the symptom, even if the symptom is relieved, then our work does continue for a series of sessions, 3 to 4, to be able to say that, you know, we've done a complete series of sessions and did a good job with what's going on. I can't hear you, Magdamo.
You come from the corporate sector.
I do.
Can you hear? You come from the corporate world. You did information security technology, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
What made you, and it's a sector that I know is very sought after now.
Yes.
And also well remunerated.
Yes.
What made you do the switch?
So,
which is another belief that society has put on us, in that if you make money, you're happy.
Yes, okay. Yes, of course. And if you look good on paper, then you're happy and successful,
exactly.
Right? Regardless of what's going on within. So what I've realized during the first lockdown was that if I were to die, I would regret the path I had chosen up to that point. And I decided that if I am to live, let me do something meaningful.
Okay.
So what I did was just do more courses and spend much more time in personal development than before. I mean, I had been following Tony Robbins for about 10 years up to that point.
I have to say that I've watched a few of his YouTube videos and I find him quite daunting.
Yes. Yes, many people do. It's it takes getting used to. And due to the fact that of course, he comes across with a lot of confidence. And at the same time, everything he's doing, because I've done his training, like not just his events, but also his training. I've been training strategic intervention and life coaching, where they explain everything he does and why, and the tone of voice and the words he's using and how he interrupts the pattern. It's all based on science. And the fact that people think he's just coming across saying big words and thinking highly of himself, it's a misunderstanding, because he's doing exactly what he needs to do to disrupt the patterns of people. Due to the fact, though, that, you know, he is coming on strong, sometimes people feel they need to take a step back. We are used to people being softer with us.
I think that's my reaction.
Yes,
watch him and it's so harsh or hard, I step back.
yes. So like with everyone, right? It's up to us. It's who we relate to and who resonates. So personally, he's one of my favorite guys out there. And during the first lockdown was the time that I said, okay, let me start doing some trainings. Like, let's go beyond the events and the material out there. And at the same time, I came across Marisa Peer. And it was, it's funny how it happened. I was actually subscribed on a platform with experts who were giving masterclasses, who were doing masterclasses in their area of expertise. And then they were offering a course. So I was doing a few courses on that platform myself. And since I had all the time during my day, I mean, I would finish work in the afternoon and then until the evening time that I would go to bed, it was just sitting in front of the computer doing personal development courses. So I thought, since I have the time, let me just check, you know, all the experts I don't know of and see what they are about by doing their masterclasses. So that's how it began. I watched her masterclass, and at some point she was explaining how the mind works and how she came up with her modality and the results she was having. And I was fascinated. I was like, how can this be even possible? And how do we not know it? I mean, I've been in therapy myself for many years, and it was like, why didn't anyone ever talk about hypnosis and how fast and efficient it can be and how we can access the root and save people pain from talking about their problem? At least in my case, I've been in therapy, psychoanalysis for 5 years for depression, and personally it was a brutal process. So I was just, you know, thinking, if there is such a thing out there, why hasn't anyone told me? And why didn't I do like a series of sessions to gain answers rather than what I had gone up to that point? And so I was fascinated. And then comes the time she says, let me show you what I mean. And she wanted to do a half an hour demo of like guiding us in hypnosis. Mm-hmm. And we went back to the I Am Enough, because it's what she's known for. So and I had my own prejudice myself. I was like, how can hypnosis even work and see and us seeing scenes and remotely online, she's not even here, and through a playback? And I was ready to, like, I was saying, okay, great information, but it's gone too far. And I was ready to shut it off, but I had made a list of all the experts I wanted to watch their masterclass and really wanted to, like, put a tick next to her name. So I was like, okay, I'll sit through it. And I was mind blown. I mean, I did see scenes. I did go back to the root of my belief, not feeling enough. And I was fascinated in a sense of how can in a 30-minute
session
hypnosis session remotely through a playback, I accessed information and became aware of things that I hadn't in my 5+ years of talking about my pain. And
I must admit, what's resonating with me now is this thing about only accessing your pain, because I think a lot of the time therapy does that. You keep on talking about the negative.
Yes, yes. And I remember asking
myself. It doesn't make it easy. It doesn't facilitate taking the negative and stepping gently into the positive.
Yes, that was my experience as well. It was all about becoming aware of the patterns and the dynamics within the family, and the daughter with the father, the daughter with the mother. And it was great to be able to understand that, but it stayed there. It wasn't, okay, now what do we do with it? It was the concept of, if you become aware of it, things will start to change, but they don't. I mean, maybe for some people, but not for someone with depression. Mm. You need someone to guide you on the other side.
Mm.
And that's why with RTT, for example, yes, we start by regression and therefore becoming aware of the source of our pain. And then there are exercises where we disassociate from that. So we disassociate, for example, the scenes I've seen of my source of I'm not enough in a full hypnotherapy session, then the next step would be to see what was happening as an event and possibly the limitations of the surrounding environment, of people in the surrounding environment, and not that it's a reflection of my own self-worth, because that's the belief of a child usually when something happens, whether it's rejection, violence, abandonment, and sometimes not even that. Maybe like you tell a child, go play with your friend, look, she's so nice, and the child might say, oh, you like her more than me. And they're not even able to express it so the mother or the surrounding environment can speak into it. Or they say, you know, it's late, go to bed. And the interpretation of a child might be, they don't want to be with me. So sometimes it's the simplest of things. So then what we would do, we would see the event for what it actually is.
As your place in the family, you are the third child.
Me, I'm so the first.
No, I'm talking about me.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the third child. So it can be as simple as you're the first child, and I look at my conduct, the responsibility on my brother who's the first child, and my responsibility as the third child has massive implications.
Yes.
I always believe the third child is the liberated one.
Yes,
because there are no expectations and there are no responsibilities, and just do what you. There are a few limitations, which is equally bad, but it's as simple as that. As your place in the family is what you're the number you are in the family, the first, the second, the third, the middle, the last.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why now we're talking about the awareness of a parent and the beliefs and the patterns the parents teach their children without even knowing, right? So, I mean, that's why we have stereotypes of what you expect from a first child, than the middle child, than the youngest child.
And the male and the female, and the firstborn male and the firstborn female.
Mm. And there is a reason that they're still so accurate. It's because subconsciously, that's how the parents are leading a family. And what we found is that even if someone doesn't verbalize what they expect of you, subconsciously you will respond to what they expect of you, even if they're not saying it or even if they're saying the opposite. So it's the power over how someone behaves, treats the other person actions compared to words.
Okay.
So even if our parents, for example, say...
You're very smart.
Yeah, you're very smart. If they give you a doll, for example, but someone, a scientific toy, like by definition, you know, it...
Yes.
Subconsciously, we pick up on that. It's like you're such a smart person.
The one is a pure toy, and the other one is a challenge to the mind. So it's their perception.
And someone might say, for example, that you're such a smart girl, and you can marry anyone you want, for example. But to the boy, you're such a smart boy, you will become a doctor. Or you can become anything you want, or a business person. Little girls don't hear. The conversation to little girls is very different than the conversation to little boys. And the expectations are different. And for example, Marisa Pierre has the best example that her brother was, they took him to public school. They wanted him to work in business upon graduating and so forth. And she went to public school herself. So, no, sorry, private, her brother, and here in public school. And she was talking about how in math lessons, they used to tell them in the private school her brother was going, that you have 5 businesses and you sell 2. How many businesses do you now run? And for her, it was like, you have 5 apples. Someone steals 2. How much do you have left? Subconsciously, it impacts people.
Of course it impacts people, because you're pushed in a certain direction, or you're put in a certain box.
You do, yes, and there is so much research around it. There is a research I usually love sharing in my workshops, that there was a class of 30 children that were of equal grade skills capacity, and they put them in a class where new teachers would come in. And so they didn't know their performance. The teachers didn't know their performance. They just thought it's a new class of 30 children. So what they did was they chose randomly 5 children out of those 30 kids. And they told the teachers that these 5 students are the A students. Without ever saying anything to the children themselves, and asking the teachers to not mention the grades.
Okay.
But out of those 30 kids, all equal, they chose randomly 5 kids and told the teachers, these are your A students. At the end of the year, those 5 kids aced their exams. Because they were living by the expectation of the teacher.
Of the teacher, yes.
And that's why we need to be very careful with the expectations from our children. I mean, Subconsciously they pick up on it. And of course, that happens as a parent, but also in society. What are the subconscious expectations from society, from religion, from the structure itself, from a child? We are living by it without even knowing.
Okay, no, you've seen it as a parent. You see it a lot often with your children afterwards.
Yes.
Of things you said, and you thought you were doing the right thing, and it comes and it blows up in your face, or expectations at school.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And
I'll never forget, my son was in primary school, he had difficulty concentrating. He wasn't ADD, he was never, even though they evaluated him, but the teacher kept on telling him, I'm going to put you at the back of the class because you disrupt us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he continued to disrupt.
Yes.
Because she told him he was a disruptor.
Yes.
He would break, and I kept on telling him, bring him to the front. So it could stop disrupting. And I had to, anyway, it is, I mean, it's a challenge all the time. And even though you do everything in good faith, as you said, you
yes.
don't know the mistakes. No, mistakes are not wrong. You don't know the effects it can have.
Yes, course, because this is how it works.
Because this is how it works. It's not a mistake. It's just an act, a behavior you're used to doing. You're a parent.
Exactly.
And you're doing things to the best of your ability. That's one of the things. Tell me, how well has this been received in Cyprus? How are people warming to this? Have you had a lot of interest?
I mean, through the workshops, yes, for in a sense of that there are many events now around holistic health, mental health. People are open to try new things, and due to the fact that in a group setting, there is no sharing.
Yeah.
Because we are in a group setting, so I'm guiding the experience, and people are having their different experience, but without having the dialogue I mentioned before. And I found that this gives a safety net to people to give it a try, to see what RTT and hypnosis is all about. And once they've tried it, I mean, from my experience, is that no matter how much we talk with someone or educate them, express arguments, research, and so forth, logically there might be an understanding and an acceptance, but the shift is, and the conversation we're having is completely different once they've experienced it. And that's why I'm doing the group sessions, the group workshops, to give people the opportunity to experience it and see that there is nothing to fear. On the contrary, it's the way to access the deeper parts of themselves. So the numbers are increasing. Personally, I do believe that we still need, it's going to be some time, let me put it this way, it's going to be some time before it becomes the norm. Even when people experience it and you would expect that, oh my God, I mean, they come up to me and they say, I've had this breakthrough, or I'm mind blown, I didn't know what to expect and this happened. And you see them taking their time with proceeding individually, like having a customized session. Even though there is no fear of prejudice, there is still...
not sure of taking the next step.
Yes, yes. So we do need to be out there more as practitioners and... And yeah, I mean, it's happening. The social media, of course, help a lot. We see Marisa appear all the time in mental health movements, as you said before. In the UK, she got awarded UK's number one therapist. Now in Dubai, the government of Dubai asked her for the rights of her work to incorporate parts of it in their schools.
Oh, wow. That's a big breakthrough.
It's amazing. It's amazing. NHS in the UK and the health systems abroad, they do offer hypnotherapy for... for people, you know, it's a standard thing. It's a standard modality.
In Cyprus, I know the way they approach therapy is a lot more secretive, because I know there's a lot of people in therapy in Cyprus, okay?
That's another thing I've discovered myself. People might come and have breakthroughs and you know, like, feel that finally they understand why they're behaving the way they are, why they're showing the way they are. They break the patterns, they overcome the destructive behaviors. And then when I ask them to, like, share it with people, because people are not aware of it, and someone who needs it might need to hear what you have to say, people are not very open to that.
But they are. That's a real... people think it's a weakness to express the fact that you need help. I remember when my son was battling at school, and the teacher came to me, she says to me, can I send him for an evaluation? And I said to her, of course you can send him for evaluation. Why do you need to ask me? She says to me, you'll be surprised how difficult it is for parents to admit that maybe their child is not perfect or needs help.
Yes, yes, yes.
So I said, no, please go for it. I'll take all the help I can get. But she admits it's very challenging with parents saying, well, are you saying there's something wrong with my child? What did I do wrong?
Which also comes down to lack of awareness. Lack of awareness of how we truly function. Because how can we talk about, like, no one has an issue talking about physical health, about their organs, about their sleep, about dieting, about, right? A surgery, no one has an issue talking about physical health. And when we talk about physical health, we include the whole body, all of the organs, all of, you know, the whole system. We talk about mental health, and there used to be such a prejudice that when we said mental health, we meant people struggling or facing schizophrenia, who are multiple personality disorder and psychosis. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how can you have a mind and the health of that
is not
part
important
of you means you're schizophrenic if you need help with that part of you? I mean, it's absurd.
No, it is absurd, because in fact the mind controls a lot of the body.
It
does. Because a lot of illnesses are psychosomatic.
They are. It impacts our experience of life. It impacts how we relate to each other. It impacts, you know, our relationship with ourselves. And whenever we talk about the mind, we focus on that 5%, change your mindset, affirmations, talk therapy, coaching. And it's like, what are we doing with the 95%? Why is it excluded from the equation? And why wanting to be, like, wanting that part to be healthy means I'm weak, I'm broken, I'm schizophrenic? I mean, who said that? And if someone wants to be healthy, how can you leave a part out? It's like saying, I want to be physically healthy, but no one talks about the digestive system.
But
how can you do that?
I remember when I went in for brain surgery about 4 years ago. It was a benign brain tumor, but when I had the tumor removed and I did well, the doctor said to me, you know what, half of the success of your surgery was my technique, and the other half is that you had a healthy attitude to the surgery. Because I said to him, you know what, I'm in your hands. So he said to me, you could have come in with a bad attitude. And this wouldn't have gone as well. But the fact that you stepped into it healthily and said, there's something wrong, we need to deal with it, I've got the right person, and I'm going forward. He says to me, attitude is half the battle in physical health.
Absolutely.
You can have a cut finger and think the world is falling apart.
Yes. So if it's half the... the success for physical health, imagine how important it is for mental health.
Yes. Now, I agree with you. I think we underestimate the power of the mind and how much it controls, guides the things happening in our lives.
And we are ashamed to be real. We are ashamed to show we might be going through challenging times. We might be in pain, that we haven't figured some things out. We put a facade, we create an image, we live by it, we think everyone is buying it, and the irony is that we see through each other's facades.
But you're making me laugh because it's true.
And yet, here we are.
No, I agree with you. You are making me laugh because it's true. I say to someone, how are you? And they'll say, fine. And then you can see the dullness in the eyes or the body language that is not confident or healthy or the colors they are wearing. So I agree with you. We're too scared to show vulnerability because we think it's a weakness.
Yes, we're not embracing our whole self. We think that there are parts of us that are broken, that are weak, and we're doing everything we can not to show those parts. And we're talking about feeling enough and worthy and whole. Mm. How can anyone be whole if they're rejecting parts of themselves?
And why is there anything wrong with being, I'm taking what you mentioned, why is there anything wrong with being depressed? We all go through depression at some stage in different degrees. We all have faced incredible challenges in life, and there's no way there isn't one person on earth that hasn't experienced some form of depression, which I'm using it as the easiest mental health challenge. Yet we don't talk about depression. We
don't talk about it. People are suffering in silence. Right now, where the depression rate has skyrocketed, suicidal incidents have skyrocketed. People are taking medications to numb themselves. Addictions have skyrocketed, drugs and alcohol. And what are we doing differently? I mean, we see what hiding does for us. What are we doing differently? I mean, it's,
And if you take it in to add to what you're saying, this thing about the stereotypes, suicide rates have skyrocketed, especially men's suicide rates, because men are taught they can't express feelings, or they're not allowed to be soft or not feel well or feel they can't support a family. So I think it's a very big challenge. So what is because we're coming to the end of this conversation, what would your message be to the people listening?
My message would be that there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. It's just a pattern. It's a belief. And you have the power to change your beliefs and take control of your life. It can be done easily, fast, and efficiently, and in a safe manner. My invitation would be, accept yourself for who you are and start working within. And be brave enough to be who you are in a world that's trying to make you anything but that.
And where can we find you?
I have a Facebook page, which is quite recent, and I do add a lot of content. So on Facebook, you can find me by my name, Xenia Economidou. It's Xenia. Usually do start spelling my name. So that's the best. That's the best way. My number is on there. I work both online and in person, so
It doesn't need to be limited to people living in your area.
Of course not. Of course not. And maybe you want to stay informed about an event. Maybe you want to ask a few questions. It doesn't have to be something big. I mean, you know, I know that people work with one step at a time. So reach out if you have any questions, if you want to attend an event.
Because you often, every now and again, you also have free events, introductory
That's
events.
That's correct. Correct.
So maybe make the step to at least go to an introductory event.
Yes.
And take it from there. Okay, Xenia. Well, Absolutely. Thank you for being with us. And I think we are both enough. You're enough. And I'm enough. More than enough.
We are enough by definition. It's non-debatable. We are enough by definition. And now it's funny how we are enough by definition. That's why we're here. Otherwise, we wouldn't be, right? There is something bigger, of course, that has decided we are enough, and that's why we're here. We need to tell our mind that.
And we need to act on what we're telling our mind. That every action we do, we're enough. We mustn't compare ourselves to other people and to the barometers, false barometers around us or the social content. Okay, we're enough by definition.
And not 5% of the time, but 100% of the time.
Yep. And you're allowed the ups and the downs. It's all part of life.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you for the inspiring conversation.
Thank you so much,
Xenia
Moore.
And to the listeners, I will put the link for Xenia's page on the page. When I upload the show, and you will be able to contact her directly. But it's Xenia Economidou, spelt with an X.
Yes, correct.
An X and an E Economidou, not an I. Okay. Thank you, Xenia Mo.
Thank you, Magda.
Thank you for listening, and stay healthy, and you are enough, by definition.
Yes.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.